Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, where we delve into topics that bridge wellness and science for the skin, gut, mind, body, and soul. This podcast is brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that each of us has a unique ecosystem and path to reach our full vitality.
I'm your host, Dr. Raja Sivamani, an integrative physician and an Ayurvedic practitioner. Gvome is the notion that our jiva, the Sanskrit word for vitality and the essence of life, merges with our many ecosystems that compose our biome to form our unique jivome. This podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only. None of the information presented here are a substitute for professional medical care, and this podcast does not constitute medical advice. If you have a medical concern, please consult with your physician. Namaste, everyone, and welcome to another episode on the Holistic Health Podcast. We have a treat today because we're talking about integrative approaches to treating anxiety. I know in this time and age with COVID or just with life stresses, I know that when you're thinking about anxiety, it can really swell up for each and every one of us. And there's so many different ways that we can address that. And who better than to talk to a psychiatrist who is an expert, and not only that, an integrative psychiatrist. So I'd like to welcome our guest, Dr. Judith Pence. And she is an integrative psychiatrist with a background in holistic integrative medicine. She's got a board certification in child, adolescent, and adult psychiatry. So it's pretty rare to find child and adult psychiatrists, and on top of it, integrative. And she's also got a background in Ayurvedic medicine. So really excited. So she combines the best of Western integrative medicine and really in hopes of supporting all of our best mental well-being. And her goal also, and I think this is really important, is to be as gentle as possible and to stimulate the natural healing mechanisms that we have in our body. So Judith, welcome to our podcast and really excited to talk to you.
Thank you, Raja. And I really appreciate the opportunity to connect and share some of my thoughts tonight.
You know, before we jump into anything about anxiety or mental health, I just want to know, how did you get on your path towards integrative medicine? I find so many psychiatrists that are out there, but very few of them are necessarily integrative and then Ayurvedically knowledgeable as well. I mean, it makes you pretty unique.
For me, it's actually been a lifelong journey to find ways to support my own well-being and my own healing process. And I have always had an integrative approach or outside the box approach for my own healthcare needs. But I never brought it into my practice because I wasn't exposed to any of this in my training. And so I ended up moving to New Mexico, actually, after I finished my training. And I ended up here because my sister ended up marrying a gentleman from New Mexico. And I came out in August and they were married on a mountaintop here in New Mexico. And I was one of those transplants because I fell in love with New Mexico. So I came out here and I looked around town to see, you know, what was going on. And I actually had a connection with the Ayurvedic Institute for a period of time in the early years, and then ended up actually studying Qigong somewhere in the mix. So I actually left the world of Ayurveda for a period of time. And I stayed here in town for a good number of years. But after a divorce and some really difficult challenges with seeing how psychiatry was moving to being so focused on meds only, I actually had a crisis of faith in terms of the decision I'd made to go into psychiatry, and actually pretty much handed over my practice at the time, which was pretty big, and left and went to New Zealand for a period of time and worked down there. I know.
Good for you, though. I mean, that's a big step to walk away.
It was.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I decided, well, first of all, my daughter asked me to come back. She was finishing college, had needed some support emotionally and stuff. And so I came back, but I made a decision if I was going to come back that I needed to approach things differently. And so I made a conscious decision to talk about what are the options beyond medications. And so I started to incorporate nutrition and nutrients, vitamins, nutraceuticals, different supplements, really tried to look at the holistic perspective before it became so. It's much more easier to have a conversation around this these days, but back then it was very difficult. And So I had to do a lot of my own training on my own. And I went to a lot of conferences where I didn't get CME credit to further understand things. And along the way, I actually connected with Dr. Joshi, who has an office here in Albuquerque as well as a home, and also has a clinic that's substantially bigger than what he has here in Nagpur, India. And we actually struck up a friendship. And when I would come for sessions to see him, and I would do the Panchakarma, which is an ancient cleanse that Ayurveda supports, we would have longer conversations as time went on. And so I started to really understand, especially because I was more regular about getting the work done, the Panchakarma, the value of what Ayurveda had to offer. And it was not just about the cleanse, it was at so many other levels. And so it began my journey to try to understand a little bit more about Ayurveda. And so that's how it ended up being, is because of a personal relationship with a clinician who his whole focus actually is to support Ayurveda from the Panchakarma perspective. And so it really gave me a deepening respect to what's possible.
What an incredible, honest journey there, Judith. I mean, because, you know, a lot of us have kind of like a pathway after you start medical school, and either you find your way or you struggle with burnout. And I mean, I don't know if you also, because it sounded like you had a moment where you had to really make some decisions on where you wanted to go. But, you know, let me start by asking you, did you deal with anxiety along the way? I mean, I know we're talking about anxiety and you're a practitioner, but it's rare for us to talk about what you've personally struggled with, but it probably makes it so much more personal when you're thinking about treatment. So I'm curious, did you struggle with anxiety yourself?
I did. And so one of the things that happened when I moved out here to Albuquerque to actually work in New Mexico, I started working with an HMO that doesn't exist in the way that it existed then, but it was similar to the Kaiser model. So I took a leap from, you know, training into an HMO model. And it's interesting because right now at the university where I'm still working half time, they're starting to count in terms of your volume, right? But I had to deal with that coming out of residency right away. And so 2 years into my practice there, I was feeling like the pace of what we had to do was at a level that was not humanly sustainable. And so that's how I ended up. I started to learn how to meditate on my own. And then I ended up, as I mentioned, going into Qigong. And Qigong actually was a 3 to 4 year training that I did. And so I learned a lot about how energy moves in the body through the power of Qigong. But I also learned the power of meditation through movement that is different than the mindfulness meditation that I'm actually teaching residents currently. And that movement attached to the meditation process helped me to calm my own nervous system down quite a bit. But I also need to say this, I'm a very hard worker in the sense that if you put it in front of me, I'll take care of things. And so part of the challenge for me, and it's ongoing, is not taking on too much. And so, you know, part of the challenge for me back in those days was not to keep taking on more and more responsibilities and trying to find a way to balance things for myself. And honestly, it's still a challenge for me to this day, but I manage the stress around that, and my own internal process around that has grown quite a bit. So the process has been really to help deal with the ongoing stress of seeing many people, but also their problems and how to support yourself and not get burned out in the process. And that's where, you know, these different steps of that I will share a little bit more in specifics. I mean, the things that I talk about to help manage anxiety are the things I do pretty much every day for myself.
You know, Judith, I really appreciate you talking about your personal experiences, because I think a lot of us as physicians, you know, we'll go through medical school, but we're human too, and we have to deal with a lot of these aspects of just our personal experience. So, and I think that's a great segue. How do you approach anxiety? I mean, in a global sense, what is your take on treatment and how do you engage the patient as part of the process?
I'm always listening to what the bigger story is for that person. And so I'm always looking at what are some things that are present for them that are creating issues in that moment. So, and having said that, I always go back to the basics with them. And I talk about how are you taking care of yourself on a day-to-day basis? And it's, you know, back to how are you sleeping at night? Are you sleeping at night? You know, what are the habits that lead to your bedtime? And do you have a regular bedtime? If we don't get enough sleep, you pay for it fairly quickly the next day. So again, going back to the basics and are you taking care of yourself? Talking about lifestyle and what are the things that you're doing that might be compounding the situation? I think currently, because of COVID, many of us are actually homebound in ways that we've never have in our whole lives. And so there's a whole challenge that we have in terms of how to manage that beingness, that having to be at home all the time, and also manage with family around. And that can be a unique challenge too. So anyway, so I wanted to stress about self-care and that being probably the number one thing that I try to focus on when I see people from the get-go. Now, I do a full psychiatric evaluation. I really look at what are some of the medical concerns that might be contributing to the picture. I'm going to look at what are the lifestyle challenges that they're facing. I bring in spirituality and really try to focus on how that might be beneficial for them, depending on what their belief systems are. And I'm very respectful around that. One of my positions at the university is to work with the Indian Health Service. And in that setting, I've learned to really be conscious of where people are, because there are regional differences in terms of how people maybe express their spirituality. And I mean, that's true across the United States. But with the exposure I've had with the Indian Health Service, I've really seen how many variations on the theme that people have in terms of expressing that spiritual part of themselves, or they'd have no connection at all. And that, to me, if they're willing to talk about it, not necessarily that first session, but at some point I might bring it up and say, how is there some value for you to visit and connect with that possibly? And so, because I like to bring in the idea of meditation into the picture or some sort of contemplation or mindfulness. And those are all things that I actually do try to speak about in that very first session.
I mean, you can already tell this is definitely a unique experience visiting a psychiatrist than maybe what you might normally get. But I guess that does lead me to the next question around medication. So what is the role of medications? And you've described a couple non-medication approaches. Is that typically the non-medication approaches, or do you build in anything around nutrition, diet, or any other aspects that you didn't mention?
Yeah. So I do look at, as I mentioned, lifestyle, and I look at their food intake. I actually ask, one of my first questions is, you know, are you drinking soda these days? Because surprisingly, even with the increasing information out there about the downside of soda, there are many, many people who still drink quite a bit of soda, and that can have a huge impact on their health, especially if they're pre-diabetic. You know, there's a host of issues from just drinking soda. So those are some things that I look at. You know, I take a nutritional, I ask if they are even eating fruits and vegetables. I ask about constipation. I sometimes get a giggle from people because they're like, I'm here because I've got anxiety and, you know, issues. Why are you talking about whether I'm,
it's, you know, not Ayurvedic aside to you, Judith.
I know, right. I said, if you're not going to the bathroom every day, we have a problem, or you have a problem. And it could be actually adding to your anxiety and the discomfort you're having in your body. You know, I think people forget that our bowels need to move daily, if not twice, and how important that is in terms of overall sense of well-being. I ended up losing my mom to cancer 2 years ago, and probably one of her biggest challenges was how to not have constipation, for one, because of the treatment, and two, about how to deal with her anxiety. I'll briefly mention it's because of her that I did a lot of research on CBD, and because it was just coming into, you know, our world to be able to talk about it more easily. And that helped support her to get CBD oil that was actually from a company in California that had a good track record in terms of the quality control and stuff. So I see CBD as a role for people, not for everyone, and also titrating the dose depending on the need for what's going on for them. Clearly, when a person has cancer, one has to be careful about the dosing there. So that would be, but on a more mundane level is talking about breath work. That would be something I would want to talk about. And then along the line of their anxiety, if I mentioned about fluids, I always check about caffeine. And there are still people out there that don't know that Mountain Dew has caffeine in it.
Yeah, quite a large amount of caffeine in there.
Right, exactly. It's one of the higher ones. So looking at how caffeine may actually be playing a role in their anxiety, because as you may or may not know, that first 6 to 8 ounces of caffeine does a wonderful job in terms of increasing our focus and attention. But beyond that, it actually contributes to anxiety. So when people are telling me they have 6 to 7 cups a day and they're not sleeping very well, that's one of the first conversations that we have is, again, it's looking at lifestyle and how are you contributing to your sleeplessness?
Yeah, no, this is great. I mean, just going through all these other approaches. And how do you build in medications? What is the role for medications? Just because you have that medical approach as well, and you have that those set of skills, how do you build that in?
Well, I always try to bring in the best of both worlds. And I'll share actually about a young lady that I'm working with right now. I've worked with her now for a couple of years, and she had had a lot of anxiety, but we were able to work with some deep breathing techniques, making dietary changes because she also has leans. She's not quite celiac, but she's on the verge, and meaning that she's very sensitive to wheat products and dairy and stuff. So we made a lot of those changes, and we added a regimen of some supplements such as a probiotic that I know has some good research that can support the gut. And there's a couple other products that I use very easily. Theanine, which is an over-the-counter agent made from green tea. And it has a small body of research around it, but it's very helpful for calming you down and helps with the anticipatory anxiety thoughts that can be present in a person. And it actually has shown in a small study of EEG results that it actually is similar to when you're in a meditative state. So you have that nice alertness that you can get from meditation, and yet it's calming you enough so that you can function in what you're needing to do. So that one is nice because it comes in lower doses and even has a 100 milligram dose that can be cut in half and offered to, you know, young children. I really try to avoid psychotropics with kids if at all possible. And so that's a nice go-to. I also talk about chamomile tea or lavender oil. They make a lavender tea now as well. And then massaging, you know, massaging the feet with sesame oil, for example, is an Ayurvedic tool, but is very powerful in terms of calming the nervous system down, especially for children. So I think about things, what are possible outside the box first. And then if clinically, you know, we're also looking at labs, I'm making sure they're not anemic or any other healthcare issues, and then walking towards whether there's a need for medication. If after all these lifestyle changes that I've mentioned and these other options are not sufficient, then we can actually have a conversation about what medicine might be beneficial. For example, the young lady that I mentioned, with COVID, it's been a very difficult situation for her. She's very high powered in terms of her academics, but found that the stress of trying to do it online after, you know, that quick switch that we all had to go through back in February or March led to increased gastrointestinal issues and a level of anxiety that led to panic attacks that she hadn't had in about 3 years. And I've been working with her for about 3 years, so we had found ways for her to compensate and get on with life so that she didn't need medicine. But at this juncture, we had a conversation and said maybe a low dose of like an SSRI and might be useful for her. And so we took a family history, and there was a family member fairly close who'd actually been on a particular medicine, an SSRI. So we decided to try it, just a small dose of it. And lo and behold, she's doing wonderfully at 10 milligrams of this particular medicine and is, you know, heading off to school in the next couple of weeks. Will be all online, but is feeling much more prepared. So I see that sometimes the medicines are needed for one reason or another, and maybe in 10 years we'll have more answers as to why that is. It doesn't mean that I won't prescribe. You know, I see that it can be an important tool to further reduce the suffering of a person.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the true approach to integrative medicine. You take the best of all worlds. that are there. So thanks for sharing the story and sharing your experiences there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned something about foot massages, and who doesn't want a good foot massage? I mean, of course.
Yes.
And you specifically mentioned sesame oil. And in the Ayurvedic realm, of course, we know that's a warming oil.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about, are there other oils you can substitute with? And more specifically, like coconut oil is cooling. I mean, should we be looking towards warming oils specifically if you're dealing with anxiety and massage?
If we're going to talk about Ayurveda, we need to talk about the seasons too. So
absolutely, please. That'd be great if you could just...
Yeah, so there's a seasonal approach to Ayurveda. And so some things that you would use in the winter, you're not necessarily going to be as active to use in the summertime. So I totally agree with you, Raja, in terms of using coconut oil. And depending on your constitution, you are more inclined to maybe benefit from a less heating oil. So that's an important piece to consider. Typically, when I was thinking about that, I'm thinking more of children who aren't sleeping at night and how that can be soothing for them. And I'm thinking more like school and wintertime when I was making that remark.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love it. I love the fact that, I mean, the point is that there's a personalization in here, and sesame oil is a great option. By the way, I love sesame oil. I think it's a great option.
Yes.
For certain people. But thanks for mentioning the seasons. I think that's so important too, that we have such a rhythmic cycle to our lives that even the world has this rhythm to it. And we're just part of a greater rhythm. And I wanted to shift gears a little bit because you've written a really nice book called mm-hmm. Cleanse Your Body, Reveal Your Soul. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that? What are you discussing as part of the book, or what is your hope that people take away from reading this book?
Sure. So this book took about 4 years to put together, but it's based on my many experiences with cleanse panchakarma, and which is an ancient cleanse that was much more commonly done in many, many years ago compared to now. And the value of that particular cleanse is that it is such a deep process that it goes to the cellular level and helps to pretty much reset your body in a way that few cleanses that I've ever been exposed to in the world. And I discovered after the fourth time I actually did this panchakarma that there was an impact for me at the chakra level and at the spiritual level that I found surprising, because it's not anything that Dr. Joshi would speak of very easily. Unless I would, and then I started asking him questions, and he said, yes, of course. In fact, back in the day, this is why they did it, was to cleanse one's being so that they could have a greater connection with their own spiritual self. And so that's the intent of the book, is for people to understand that Ayurveda has tools that are unique and maybe can be resourceful for people in their journey to wholeness, wellness, but also into their deeper spiritual soul connection. Truly, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And so the cleaner our body is, the closer we can get to expressing who we are meant to be on this earth. And that's been the beauty of the experience of having panchakarma for me that I wanted to share with people. So the book is actually describing what happens over an 8-day period and the shift that goes on for me at different levels, both at a physical level, but also at an emotional level. And I actually outline what the different, you know, the body work that happens. I talk about different types of enemas, you know, the bastis, and describe them in terms of the importance of and how beneficial it can be outside of PK, and how it can be very beautiful in terms of how it's very supportive. In fact, when I was in India this last time, I spoke to a group of different clinicians that treat people with cancer, and I highlighted the benefits of using bastis and maybe, you know, very simple massages that can really help reduce the suffering of a person going through cancer treatment. And they were a bit surprised because they hadn't really thought about it. And I said, one guy questioned, well, one can't do PK during cancer treatment. I said, that's not what I'm saying. I said, just those particular, you know, different treatments that I mentioned selectively can reduce the suffering of a person who wouldn't want to be less constipated while they're going through chemotherapy. So that's actually the whole gist of the book, is my experience with a week of PK when I was there in 2014.
Yeah. And, you know, we have another podcast where we just focused on Panchakarma. When you say PK, Panchakarma, and, you know, and in your book, you say cleanse your body, but you also mentioned revealing your soul. And so that emotional experience, would you say that was, did you have unexpected emotions that came up, or were you prepared? And then how did you deal with that introspection? Because I think that just naturally occurs with Panchakarma for anyone that goes through it.
Right. It does. In fact, I have had a desire to be a resource for people, you know, to talk about it, because I've run into people who have felt overwhelmed when they left treatment and felt like there wasn't much of a support network out there for them. And one of my ideas going forward is actually trying to create support network, but also a psychological process that they can maybe relate to through the Patanjali Sutras, through the power of the Bhagavad Gita, and looking at our own ability to connect in terms of our own psychology, how that can be useful. So for me, one of the beauties I found was you could emote and cry on the table and not have to really sort out, is this something I have to figure out right now? You just be present with the emotion and you release it. And oftentimes by the end of the morning or that day, it was all gone. So it was really nice, because I know in our culture, and at least in the American culture, we tend to want to ruminate on it to the point where it becomes a part of you. And to me, there's value in noticing, witnessing, and letting go, and not staying attached to it. Now, we don't have time to talk about this, and I'm not talking about people that have had deep trauma. I'm talking about, you know, issues that people can, you know, work through in a Panchakarma type session. I've worked with kids of all ages and many who have been adopted or have been abused. And so I know that there can be some huge challenges that people are facing that can be a barrier to go into some of the deeper places. That said, I feel like this is the value of PK still isn't fully understood either in here or in India for that matter.
It's beautiful about the way you speak about Panchakarma and the way you just allow that permission to just be yourself. I mean, I think that's so important. Well, Judith, I mean, I think it's a great way to end the podcast. Can you tell us, where can people find you? What's a good website? Or if you have social media, what are ways that people can connect with you online?
Yes. So I do have a Facebook page, Dr. Judith Pence, and it's P-E-N-T-Z, P like in Paul. And then I also have a website that's drpence.com, and that's drpentz.com. I have an Instagram, and it's Judith Pence MD, and a Twitter account, Pence1.
So multiple ways to find you. Well, right. Judith, thank you so much for joining us. I can only imagine that there'll be more conversations that we can have, because there's so many ways to look at all of these facets of the mind. And thank you for doing the work that you're doing to try to really take an integrative approach with it all.
Thank you, Rajan. Thanks for allowing me to share my thoughts tonight.
This is the Holistic Health Podcast, brought to you by Jivong, where we believe that cultivating a healthy ecosystem unique to you is important to living vital and living well. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And visit us at jivom.com. Check out our membership options to take your health to the next level.